Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. Here's a little story for you. Maybe about 6 or 7 months ago, John Whitehead, who was the first head of the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, was touring the WNYC studios. And I said hello to him, and then I said, you know, every time I look at what's happening at Ground Zero, my heart breaks a little bit. And he said, yeah, mine too. So we're going to take a look at Ground Zero, despite my breaking heart and maybe yours, with Charles Bagley, the New York Times development reporter, and Miriam Greenberg, assistant professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz and author of Branding New York, How a City in Crisis Was Sold to the World. Welcome back to WNYC, both of you.
Morning, Andrea.
So,
good morning.
Charles Bagley, I have a little clip to play, which I thought would come in useful the time that I made it. And, it turns out that it does. February 27th, 2003. Do you remember that date?
Yes.
Yes, you remember. So for those of you who don't remember, it was the reason I do remember this is because February 27th happens to be my daughter's birthday. So it's not like I go around remembering every date in history of the World Trade Center redevelopment. But this was the day they unveiled the master plan down with Daniel Libeskind in the Winter Garden. And John Whitehead was there. Governor Pataki was there. Shelley Silver was there. The mayor was there. I mean, it was just a huge, you know, sort of display of unity and happiness. And afterwards, we met, you and I, Charles Bagley, and also Michael Powell, who is now your colleague at the New York Times, but at the time was working for the Washington Post. And here's a discussion in which I said, let's make predictions about what's going to happen in 5 years. This is for posterity. This is Charlie Bagley, Michael Powell. So, Charlie.
5 years from now, I expect to see a memorial, a public building, a transit center, and that's about it.
15 years from now?
15. Well, maybe we'll have an office building or two office buildings.
Okay. Your prediction?
5 years from now. 5 years from now, we will have the spire, and we'll have the public space. And I'd suspect that we'll have one of the other office buildings, probably smaller than now envisioned.
Okay, I think
he's got to have a tenant, unless he wants to put up a white elephant.
That ultimately, okay, so like I actually agree with you in 5 years, but I don't think it totally stops there. I think eventually you'll see some offices looking something like this.
Oh, they will not look like this. I predict.
Well, Charles Bagley, I would say that we were all wrong because 5 years ago was February of 2008, but you were the most right of any of us, particularly in your "it won't look like this" and the early questions that you were raising all along about the issue of a tenant. But bring us up to date. There are some talks at Ground Zero, and this is another one of those situations where the mayor has been saying, you know, doomsday if we don't get to the scenario and creating deadlines and nothing has happened. So tell us where we are now in the World Trade Center talks. And I should say for the record, I mean, if you go there, you can see some stuff going up, but nothing on the order of a memorial or a tower.
Well, but it is true that the difference between today and 2003 is there is a lot of construction underway now. So you can see that what used to be called the Freedom Tower is rising. It's a couple, supposedly more than 10 stories above ground level, that you can see the outlines of the transit center.
The building formerly known as the Freedom Tower, is that kind of like the artist formerly known as Prince?
Well, it is. I guess in many people's minds it was always a very ill-conceived project. And when Pataki dubbed it the Freedom Tower, I don't think he did him any good. It might have served as a good place for a department store chain. Target, but I don't know that it's going to serve as a corporate office tower. So right now, it's mainly there's going to be federal offices in there, and a Chinese firm.
There is
stuff going on. There is a lot of construction, and even Larry is up to about street level with the first of his three towers. The question is, what's going to happen in the next 6 months? Whether whatever momentum they have now is going to suddenly evaporate or not.
Now, when you say evaporate, do you mean actually stop? Construction actually stop?
Well, there is a battle that's heating up between the Port Authority and Silverstein, who is the developer for these three towers. In 2006, when they rejiggered the development plan, he was required to build these three towers by 2012, 13, depending on what happens. And the idea was he was going to have insurance money. He would have Liberty bonds, tax-exempt Liberty bonds, and private financing. But fast forward to today, he can't find a tenant. All the various financial firms that he once thought of as good prospects are not around at all. There's no money out there. The credit markets are kind of stopped up, and he can't find the money to build these things. So he's asked the Port Authority to do it.
Now, one of the things you've been pointing out is that Mayor Bloomberg has now joined with Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver. So, you know, the sort of politics makes strange bedfellows could not be more apt in the unlikely alliance of those two. They are backing Silverstein. And on the other side is the Port Authority, who is saying, you know, we're a transportation agency. We have airports and a bus terminal and all kinds of other things to fund. We cannot be putting up this kind of money to back a real estate venture, which they're not quite saying, but sort of unspoken in that is questionable real estate venture.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's instructive to go back to July of 2001 when the Port Authority signed a lease with Larry Silverstein. He was taking over the management of the property, and it was a huge real estate deal at the time. And Pataki said, you know, I've always favored getting the Port Authority out of the real estate business. And by privatizing this, the port will be able to focus on the city's harbors, bridges, and tunnels and become an economic engine for the whole region.
And that, I mean, that and this sort of is the perfect segue into Miriam Greenberg, who is an assistant professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz, because that's sort of where we were in 2001, isn't it? I mean, the sense of this sort of bad experiment in the Port Authority getting involved in real estate, you know, it had finally become successful. And yet, you know, in some ways, you know, here we are again back in the early 70s.
Yeah, there are striking similarities to what's going on and what Charles describes going on at the World Trade Center site and what happened in the 1970s, and as well as a lot of the kind of controversy surrounding this proposed public-private partnership, which many feel is not an appropriate use of public money, you know, using Port Authority money to subsidize speculative real estate. This was something that they first got involved in with the building of the World Trade Center in the 70s. It started in the late 60s and completed in 1973. And it was hugely controversial at the time and, you know, problematic from different people's perspectives on a number of levels. It was a similar kind of, you know, joining together of strange bedfellows, I guess you could say. In this case, you had, or in some ways not so strange, you had Nelson and David Rockefeller joining together, David being the head of Chase Manhattan Bank and Nelson being the governor of the state at the time, and the Rockefellers owning a lot of real estate in Lower Manhattan and, you know, obviously standing to benefit a lot from this. But also you had you know, you had the Port Authority for the first time being used in this kind of a way, and this created a lot of a lot of backlash against folks that were displaced in Lower Manhattan, the Radio Row and Little Syria and a lot of the industries that were there, as well as the Midtown real estate industry, which I believe today is also kind of up in arms about the kind of preferential treatment that the downtown real estate industry is receiving and the potential glut of office space that this could create at a time of crisis and recession, which indeed happened in the 70s as well.
So a question for you both. In his book Up From Zero that was written by the New Yorker's Paul Goldberger, he sort of says, the sort of biggest decision about the World Trade Center site was, sort of made without any public discussion, which was really, should there be rebuilding there? I mean, Mayor Giuliani at the time thought the whole thing should be a memorial park, but that was, not anything that was really sort of, given a lot of credence or discussion. And are we living now with the consequences of not having, had that discussion, Miriam Greenberg?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are many other uses that the site could have been put to, and there wasn't necessarily a need for another, 10 million square feet of office space, or what was lost with the World Trade Center. I mean, I think that there was so much discussion citywide and so many forums with public discussion and involved. And I think that there some people felt that it would be fitting to rebuild what had been there, but I think a lot of people felt that if there wasn't an economic need, and there was on the other hand this broader need for a memorial, that should be the focus. And I think in this case, it seems that economic interests have kind of trumped what a lot of the public was calling for.
Well, I think that sounds right. I also think, though, that while you got to wonder, is there a need for 10 million square feet? I think you do have to designate some place for new office buildings. The market has to renew itself, and there's a lot of Lower Manhattan that is, there are historic buildings, and you can't tear them down. So there's got to be a place for new buildings, and I think that in hindsight, wouldn't it have been really something if Governor Pataki had stood up and said, "Listen, this is a terrible tragedy. We're going to rebuild something really great here, but let's all take a deep breath and figure out exactly what we need and how to do it, and sort of dial it all the craziness down." And the media contributed to this, I think, where we were all asking, where's the plan? Where's the plan? And how fast is it going to get built?
And as you so aptly pointed out at the time, the plan sort of was meaningless. I mean, that's sort of the amusing thing. I mean, if you go back and you look at, sort of February 2003, I mean, we were all focused on, what is it going to look like? And there was this big, flourish. And yet, the plan really wasn't the plan. It was what we were all focused on. There's something that kind of makes me surprised to hear you say that, because you've got to be the biggest skeptic that ever existed. I mean, I feel like you've been asking, for the longest time, who is going to populate these buildings? Who is going to be the tenant? And it's a question that still, how many years are we later? 8? We don't know.
Well, that's true. And I think that we're in for some potentially profound changes in New York. I mean, the big space users traditionally have been the investment banks. They're the ones that commission a million square foot building or a 1.5 or a 2 million square foot building. So, for instance, when Merrill Lynch leaves World Financial Center and they leave behind a 2 million square foot building, you think, well, who's going to move into that? Well, it's probably not going to be an investment bank, because they all have their new buildings now. So what's been moving downtown? It's largely been small firms, entrepreneurial, and law firms. And the average size of the lease is something like 24,000 square feet.
Miriam Greenberg, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So that would take about 200 companies signing leases to fill up the vacant space.
Miriam Greenberg, I mean, given the discussions that we've been talking about that are going on about additional financial backing for Larry Silverstein, which, you know, is sort of ironic. I mean, you know, given the sort of cause of the financial crisis being, you know, sort of people taking too much real estate risk, and in some ways, I guess you could find a parallel situation in that now. But I'm wondering, you know, given what you've written about this issue, whether you think that, you know, there's anything that Silverstein could be asked to give back if he does get this additional financing or some of the additional financing that he's seeking.
To give back in the sense of public space?
Or in terms of community development,
community development.
You know, other of these issues that you've talked about, you know, affordable housing. I mean, sort of, you know, anything that the city that could be a sort of, you know, public benefit other than what I think he would argue, which is that there's a public benefit to having the site rebuilt.
I see. Yes. Well, certainly. I think that it becomes a question of how much profit he's going to be making from the site, and what other sort of countervailing social public needs exist in that area. And so, you know, on the one hand, there's the question of, you know, how much office space needs to be built there, as Charles was saying, insofar as any needs to be built, how much, and then what other uses the building could be put to. I mean, I think that the Lower Manhattan Arts Council has used some of the vacant space in Lower Manhattan for art spaces, and certainly other public uses, insofar as there's going to be a lot of vacant space in the downturn, could be used for public purposes. Certainly other money, whether from Silverstein or from the state, could be used for affordable housing and other pressing needs in Manhattan, on the Lower East Side, and other areas that were designated part of the original Liberty Zone, which did not benefit as much from the kind of, you know, the Liberty Bonds and so forth that were given mainly to high-end firms.
Charles Bagley, we need to wrap up soon, but just quickly turning to another big development that you've been writing about, the Atlantic Yards project in Brooklyn. You wrote just recently about how the developer, Forest City Ratner, is trying to get financing and how that is far from certain. Sort of, you know, having written about these issues for a long time, where do you think that's going in terms of his ability to get the financing?
Well, he's got a very small window of opportunity here, which just got even a little bit smaller today. The state's highest court announced that it will consider a challenge to, you know, the eminent domain at the Atlantic Yards site. And so that's going to take place in September. Now, the developer's bankers had hoped to start selling bonds for this arena, the centerpiece of the Atlantic Yards project, in late September and early October. It looks like that schedule is going to be thrown off a little bit. But they've got to sell these bonds by December 31st to qualify for tax-exempt status.
And the hearing is in October, right? I mean, the decision could be even later.
No, the hearings, yesterday they announced that the hearings are going to be in late July, July 29th and 30th.
So they'll roll sometime in the fall.
Those hearings will take place 29th and the 30th, and then I think in early September, the ESDC, the Empire State Development Corporation, will reconvene and, in all likelihood, reaffirm its position endorsing the project. But you still got, you know, this big lawsuit out there on eminent domain.
Well, the window is still open a crack, I guess, and we will check back with you on that project. Thanks so much, Charles Bagley of the New York Times, development reporter, and Miriam Greenberg, professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz, author of Branding New York, How a City in Crisis Was Sold to the World. And speaking of branding, can you get a good cup of coffee in this town? We'd like your calls. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. In just a moment, we'll be discussing whether you can get a decent cup of coffee in this town right after this.